The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some days I'll do a 3,000 or 4,000 word day. Other words, I struggle to get that 1,000 done. But I enjoy the first draft of a novel more than anything on earth. And that process has worked for me for every one of the books I've done.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Award-winning number one New York Times bestselling novelist C.J. Box spoke to me about his early years as a small-town reporter, how to write a novel in 3 to 4 months, and his latest Joe Pickett book, Shadows Reel. C.J. is the author of 30-plus novels, 7 of which are standalone, including The Bitter Roots and the story collection Shots Fired. Over 10 million copies of his books have been sold in the U.S. and abroad. He's won more awards than I have time to list here, including the Edgar, the Anthony, 2 Barry Awards, and the 2016 Western Heritage Award for Literature by the National Cowboy Museum. His latest in the Joe Pickett series is Shadows Reel, and Kirk has said of the book, "Just 20-second adventure continues to give good value. Old-school Nazis, newfangled terrorists, big sky country, it's all here." His books have been translated into 30 languages, and 2 TV series based on his novels are currently in production, Big Sky on ABC and Joe Pickett on Spectrum Originals, soon to be Paramount Plus. He's an executive producer for both. In this file, CJ and I discussed his 20-year overnight success, why game wardens in Wyoming meet more bad guys, how to write 2 books in one, the unique research and meticulous plotting that goes into his novels, why he takes time to pay it forward for his fellow scribes, puffing cigars with Mark Twain, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us.
It was sort of spring-like almost.
Yeah, yeah. It does kind of smell like spring in the air here as well. I'm in North Carolina, but yeah, I guess you had a kind of an interesting winter.
Yes, we had more snow than I can ever remember, which is good for, I'm a fisherman, so that means there'll be plenty of water in the rivers and it'll be a great, great summer. It is also, all this snow has moved the elk from the high country in the mountains down more where we live. So my wife and I view elk every day out on our own property.
Very nice, very nice. Well, I understand that you were, that you've done quite a bit of hunting and you're an avid outdoorsman. Have you hunted elk recently, or is that something that you?
Oh yeah. I write about it in the books. It's kind of funny where I live in the fall. Everyone greets each other, like in the post office and other places, like, have you gotten your elk yet?
Yeah.
It's very part of the culture. It's part of something everybody does. You know, I probably wouldn't hunt elk so much anymore, except I have 3 adult daughters who are real foodies, and they love to serve elk to their guests. So they put pressure on me every year to get an elk and get it to them. And I'm a sucker when my girls ask for something. So I do it more for them than for me, but it is part of the landscape.
It is. And speaking of that, I mean, I can't wait to, of course, dig into your writing process. But yeah, I want to turn back the clock a little bit, as we do with so many authors, and just talk about your superhero origins. And then, of course, the incredible Joe Pickett series and Joe, the character. But yeah, take us back a little bit to kind of the beginning of this incredibly prolific and successful career. And kind of talk a little bit about those early years as kind of a small town newspaper reporter and journalist.
Sure. It was small time. That's okay. It was for a little weekly newspaper.
I didn't mean it that way.
My background was journalism. I went to college with the journalism scholarship. That was my main thing. My first job out of college was working in a real small town in Wyoming for the newspaper. And I didn't realize what great training ground that was. Learning to write fast, meet deadlines, interview people in all walks of life who I would not normally know or even want to approach. But it was great background for when I first started writing the first Joe Pickett novel, which turned out to be Open Season. But it was like a 20-year process. I started working on fiction while I was a newspaper reporter, and it was literally another 20 years before the book was published. So in that interim, I had a bunch of different jobs. My main love was always writing, but I have to provide for my family, and I was never a starving artist. But it took 5 years after I completed the first book, Open Season, for it to actually get published. And when it did, it was about Joe Pickett. It was about the Endangered Species Act, a contemporary Western kind of novel. I never really thought of it as a mystery, but it was. And it was well reviewed, and it was a New York Times notable book, and went into 5 printings, and the publisher wanted another book with Joe Pickett, and that's how the series was born. I never thought I'd be writing 20 books with Joe Pickett, but luckily the foundation laid in that very first book has served me well, and I never have to regret anything in it or wish the setting was different or the characters were older or whatever. So it all worked, and each book has then subsequently done better than the previous book. That arc is still going up, and I still find it hugely enjoyable to write because I love writing about the issues in the West and in small towns and contemporary issues, controversies, energy-based development stories, endangered species, hunting, fishing. All the stuff that interests me is what's in the books.
Absolutely. Well, it shines through, and congratulations on the work and the latest, of course. I wanted to tie back Joe Pickett back into my own experiences with the elk hunting piece, because just to circle back, as you put it, it's just kind of a way of life for families that live in the Mountain West. And I actually know a real life Joe Pickett. My soon to be brother-in-law was a game warden in the Aspen and Snowmass area.
Yeah, Wyoming game warden, it's a little different. Game wardens in the Mountain West are much more law enforcement than they are in some parts of the country, where game wardens are more like conservation officers. Out here, they tend to have great big territories, sometimes up to 5,000 square miles. They're very heavily armed, They're very much on their own. They can rarely get backup if they get in a situation, and they're out every day in their pickups with their Labradors. And they do get involved in a lot of things that aren't just simply checking a guy for his fishing license. Hostage situations, kidnappings, murders, anything that involves law enforcement in a rural area will likely include the game wardens from that area. So once I found that out, it really opened things up on what kinds of topics I could write about and what I could get Joe Pickett involved with. But, you know, as you say, yeah, Aspen Snowmass area, that's very much elk hunting country. So, yeah, your brother-in-law probably has plenty of good stories about that.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think maybe the most exciting story, spending time near, I guess, Hunter S. Thompson's ranch when he was still alive. Apparently, you know, he used to make quite a racket there with munitions that he would fire off and launch. Apparently, he had a beef with his neighbor, so they would shoot at each other. So maybe that is the most exciting. That was the most exciting part of his job. But he did always have a freezer full of elk. So, that was a yearly a treat to get to go up there and have elk chili.
Yes. Yeah, it's good stuff.
100%. So the most recent is Shadows Reel, the 22nd in the series, an amazingly prolific series that's been lauded. And I will just, of course, I'll point at the book. I'll point at your home base there, which is cjbox.net. And this most recent one has been described as Wyoming game warden Joe Pickett and his wife Mary Beth make separate discoveries that put the Pickett family in a pair of killer's crosshairs in this thrilling new novel in the best-selling series. Hey, I just want to take a quick break for my podcast recommendation for this week. Have you run out of interesting things to say to friends when you actually get to see them? Then take a listen to the Book Dreams podcast. Each week, co-hosts Julie Sternberg and Eve Yohalem use books to explore fascinating questions like, what happened when a Harvard professor staked her reputation on an alleged Gospel of Jesus's wife that turned out to be fake? How did debut author Tom Lin save the American Western by blowing it to bits? Are pigeons rats with wings or wonder birds? And what's the who, when, where, how, and especially why of books bound in human skin? Recent and upcoming Book Dreams highlights include conversations with Disha Filya, award-winning author of The Secret Lives of Church Ladies, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Catherine Schultz, and neuroscientist and dreams researcher Siddhartha Ribeiro. You can subscribe and listen to Book Dreams wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, we won't do any spoilers here, but talk a little bit about writing the different POVs in this one, and how I understand it was a little bit of a departure for you.
It is, yeah. It's almost like two books in one. One is with Joe Pickett and his wife Mary Beth. Mary Beth is she's the smartest of the two, and has been since the series began. She's also the director of the local library in Saddle String, Wyoming. And she shows up early in the morning. She's got to do Thanksgiving dinner for all the girls who are coming home. They're all adults. And when she arrives at the library, there's been a package dropped off on the front. And when she opens it, she finds an authentic 1937 photo album that belonged to the number 5 Nazi official in the government. She's both intrigued and horrified that this has been given to the library. But when she starts to dig into it, she finds out that a history on that photo album, it belonged to a guy named Julius Streicher, who was one of the worst anti-Semites and the worst Nazis ever. And so she wants to know, how did it get in Wyoming? Why did they drop it off at her library? And while she's doing that, people are dying around the community who have associations with this photo album. Somebody wants it and wants it back, and there's something in the album that somebody's desperate to get back. So she enlists Joe Pickett. They're trying to figure out who it is, trying to get the album, and what is the significance of that. And in the meantime, Joe Pickett's buddy, Outlaw Falconer Nate Romanowski is on the hunt for a man who has stolen all of his falcons and threatened his family. And Nate goes across the Pacific Northwest in the summer on the hunt for this guy. And he goes through a lot of urban unrest in places like Denver, Seattle, and Portland, right in the heart of that. And both storylines all come together in a final showdown in the end.
Interesting plotting. And I will kind of return to the Denver piece, because I understand that you're a graduate of the University of Denver, a campus that I actually lived several blocks away from recently.
Okay, yes. Very familiar with Denver. Everything, if you live in Wyoming, everything flows through Denver. You know, if you fly anywhere, you go through Denver. If you get news, you get it from Denver. So we're very keyed in to Denver, even though we're remote from it.
Interesting. I do remember these riots, and they were pretty intense, actually, a pretty kind of interesting showdown between, as you remember, I'm sure you researched the Antifa, the handbook. I understand. But yeah, talk a little bit about the research that went into this book regarding specifically Antifa.
And yeah, I found it fascinating. You know, who are they? Where are they at? How are they organized? In this case, the bad guy is associated with Antifa, but in a way that isn't revealed till the very end. It's got a different agenda, and I won't reveal what that is. But in order to research the book, I did go to Denver in the aftermath of some riots downtown. Didn't see them happen, but definitely they'd been there. Lots of windows smashed out, lots of cops on the streets. Seattle was much the same way last summer. Mm-hmm. And then I got to Portland just in time to be right in the middle of an Antifa riot in downtown Portland. I watched it out of my downtown hotel window. I was on the third floor, and they smashed out all the windows on the first floor. And I watched it, you know, develop over the night, and was astonished by the fact that there wasn't a single cop on the street the entire time. I talked to people downtown. Downtown Portland is different than, if anybody's ever been there, they would not recognize it. But so I wanted to, you know, give that kind of eyewitness ground floor view of some of the things that were happening, especially last summer. And so read the books about the movement, read about them, talked to a couple of people who were associated with Antifa in Portland, and wanted to include that in the book. It's not a anti-Antifa book, because they turn out to be kind of a role player in the book. But I did want to incorporate that. And my editor in New York, when he got it, he said, "Oh man, this is the first novel I have read yet that gets into the middle of that."
Yeah. Well, it shines through, and obviously you have a rather unique research process, but talk a little bit about the synergy between going from the research process to now your process, 22, you know, 30 plus novels later, how you are able to get into flow state and really generate pages. Are you working on a word count? Are you going chapter by chapter, as some authors do? Talk a little bit about your process when it's at its peak.
I always start with the issues or the controversies or whatever I'm going to, cover. Because I always think all these books are considered mystery or thriller books. To me, they're always about something besides that. They're not whodunits. In this book, you know, it was going to be about the Nazi photo album and the search across the Pacific Northwest amidst Antifa. So I research both those subjects in full before I ever write a word. And then I sit down and do a bullet point outline. And the way I always look at it is, how do I pull a reader through these issues in a page-turning way without making them agenda books or political screeds or anything like that? So I do the point by point all the way from first chapter to the end, and then start literally writing on top of the outline. And then I do 1,000 words a day minimum until the book is done. So the actual writing process isn't as long as when I talk about the process, I mean, research is a big part of that. The writing process itself sometimes is only 3 or 4 months. Once I have it all blocked out and figured out. And then I just, some days I'll do a 3,000 or 4,000 word day. Other words, I struggle to get that 1,000 done, but I enjoy the first draft of a novel more than anything on earth. And, that process has worked for me for every one of the books I've done.
That's incredible. Well, it's interesting. I think that you're at the point in your career where your name is larger than the title, which is always quite an accomplishment. But also, given the fact that you have the shortest name of many contemporary popular fiction writers, that's saying something.
Well, you know, who knew going into this? But it's been the greatest. I've sat down with other authors to, you know, sign hundreds of books. one in particular, I can think, Diana Gabaldon in Phoenix. You know, and she has to write Diana Gabaldon over and over and over again, and I can just write 5 letters and I'm done. So it wasn't strategic, but it sure is nice when it comes to that.
It has saved the muscles in your hand quite a bit of recovery and pain. Before we do a couple fun ones here for you, I will mention the book again, Shadows Reel, of course, CJ Box's latest in the Joe Pickett series, and I will link to your home base there, your Amazon page. You are on all the socials. I'll link to those. And one final note on that one, the 22nd Joe Pickett novel captures what Box's readers love, the mixture of suspense, the outdoors, the familial relationships at the heart of the series. And of course, I thought book list said nicely, Box expertly maneuvers readers through two entirely different stories in this 22nd entry in the immensely popular series. Old school Nazis, newfangled terrorists, big sky country, it's all here based on this nice Kirkus review. And quickly, you've been very sweet to your peers. I don't know how you find the time to read your colleagues' books and blurb them as much as you do, but I've had a lot of comments from other authors thanking you for your generosity. I just wanted to mention that one. Internationally bestselling novelist and short story author Nicholas Butler spoke to me about working shitty jobs, the irony of his latest title, Godspeed, and defining the modern Western. Talk a little bit about, you know, kind of this classification of the modern Western, and you kind of had mentioned a couple of titles, or, you know, comparatively, you know, we're talking about maybe some Cormac McCarthy or similar, but yeah, talk a little bit about that classification, because I definitely sense that about it, you know, and it is a new kind of expression of this thing, the Western.
Yeah. Well, as a Midwesterner, you know, I was a little intimidated to sort of branch out into this territory, but I felt a hell of a lot better after we started getting, you know, blurbs back, and somebody like CJ Box was like, yeah, this is a good book. And yeah, he's a Wyoming guy through and through. That meant a lot.
I remember my first novel, to have, you know, Tony Hillerman and Lee Child and others who were generous enough to offer blurbs. It meant a lot. So I want to carry that forward as much as I can.
That's very, very nice of you. All right. Quick fun one. If you could have dinner with any author from any era at your favorite restaurant in the world, who would you take and where would you take them? All expenses paid, of course.
It would probably be Mark Twain. And I would host him at a restaurant not far from my house at a very exclusive Dude Ranch resort where he could drink a lot of wine and smoke cigars and tell stories.
Very cool. A Dude Ranch. Remind us what a Dude Ranch is.
I mean, it's basically a Western vacation. People book for a week, they ride horses, they fish. There's one not far from my place called Brush Creek Ranch that is probably the most exclusive one in the world. It costs $1,500 a night, but they have a tremendously good restaurant there with something like 30,000 bottles of wine available. But it's a great atmosphere.
Very good. 30,000 bottles of wine is quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Well, we appreciate your time today. Of course, congrats on the success of the series and the latest. This is really a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it very much, and I have not read the series in order, but found myself sucked right into the plotting. Of course, congratulations on that one. The last question for you is simply, any advice to your fellow scribes on just how to persevere maybe through, the good times and or the bad, and how to keep going?
Well, yeah, I think that's the key. I mean, I mentioned earlier my 20-year success story. I think if you're a writer, you're hardwired to be a writer, whether you're successful or not, whether you're published or not. And I think if that's what you do, that's your calling, do it. There's other outlets, even if, commercial published fiction isn't the way to go. But I think it's very important not to follow the market, not to say, what are they looking for? What does my book have to have the word girl in the title to be successful? And just go your own direction and your own way, and not look out there, like I say, to follow the market. I think authenticity comes through, break through, and stick with that.
100%. And that's great advice. Congratulations on your two current television series. I didn't get a chance to ask you about those, but Big Sky on ABC and, of course, Joe Pickett, which I understand has been picked up for a second season. Is that right?
It's been picked up for a second season, and Joe Pickett will be on Paramount Plus in May. So it'll have much wider access, and it's really good.
Well, congrats on those, and come back again and chat with us about that experience, and we wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you very much. This is fun.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.